about, would you mind very much dedicating this year to infants in our neighborhood who had heart surgery and is having complications? Her name is Basha Rachel. Basha Rachel.
Say the name again.
Basha Rachel. Bas Ruth.
Basha Rachel.
Bas Ruth.
So Basha, I've
good.
Okay. Yes. Fine, very good. We'll dedicate then the shir to her. Fine. Very good. Okay. I am ready to start when you are. Do you want to give me the thumbs up when I'm ready, when you're ready?
Hello,
Reggie. Yes?
Ready.
Okay, I'm going to start the shiur now. So if you could mute yourselves, if you could mute yourselves, and we'll start the shiur straight away. If everybody could mute, thank you. Okay. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Beis, brings down a question that the Talmidim of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai asked the Rebbe. They asked him, Lama nen shu b'gezeira? Why did they have the gezeira in Shushan? What was the reason behind it? And Reb Shimon Bar Yochai answered them and said, she nenu misudas Achashverosh. They took pleasure and they enjoyed the suda of Achashverosh. That was the reason why they were punished in the time of... I saw a beautiful memah some time ago from Hagon HaTzadik Reb Yisrael Belsky. He was a Gon, he was a Poisek, he was a multidimensional Talmud Chochem, in many, many spheres, in mathematics, in biology, in anatomy, he was astrology, he was an incredible Gaon. And he asked a question, what does it mean, in this Maimah he asked, what does it mean, Shenenu Bisuda Sachashu? What was the crime? What was the Aveira that they had done? And he said, maybe you'll say that there wasn't kosher food there. But we see in the Megillah that the Megillah says quite clearly, it was according to what everybody wanted, meaning whatever heksha you wanted, you were provided with. Everybody was given whatever they required, whatever heksha they wanted. It wasn't because the food wasn't kosher. Maybe you'll turn around, he asked, and said that maybe there was treatises there. Maybe the men and women were together. But we see that it's not true, because the men were all in the gina, and the women were in the Beis HaMelech. When Vashti made a suda, she made it inside the Beis HaMelech. So you see, it's not true. They were all separated. The men and the women were separated. So it can't be that reason. What is the reason why? Maybe you'll say because of Avodah Zorah. So you say, it doesn't mention Avodah Zorah. Nowhere does it say that there was Avodah Zorah there. So what was the reason? What's the actual crime, if we're going to label it, of Nenu Misudas Achashverosh? What was it exactly? And he explained that the point was that they were literally, they enjoyed it. They enjoyed all that they saw. They had tremendous enjoyment. That you'll ask the question, so does a punishment fit the crime? For that, lahashmid laharug l'abed is kol ha-yehudim. For that, there was an enormous oynish given on a gzar din of a final solution, a holocaust against Klal Yisrael. Just because they enjoyed something, does the punishment fit the crime? What's behind it? What's behind it? And let's analyze it. And he analyzed it in the following way. We see in the Megillah that the purpose of the banquet is to dazzle everybody who would come, meaning everybody become very impressed as he was and his tremendous affluence that he had. That was the purpose behind the suda, behind the banquet. And we're told six expressions of what his intention was. Laharois oisha oid malchusai, to show the enormous wealth the void malchusai. Interesting, the Mephoshim explained that none of the treasures which he brought out were on stolen property. They were all his own. They were all his own wealth and his own riches that he had. No one should come there and say, yeah, the king sold it from me. It was all his own. And the splendor and the majesty of his gedula. There were 6 points. Oyshe kvoid malchusai, yukol tiferes gedulosai. So it says at the beginning of the Megillah. And that was the point of it. The point was to make everybody dazzled, make everybody very impressed with who Ahasuerus was. It's interesting, the Vilna Gaon brings down and comments that the Megillah says that it took 180 days. Why did it take 180 days? What was behind 180 days? And the Vilna Gaon explains that Nebuchadnezzar had privilege of having 1,080 treasures. When he died, he buried them in the Euphrates so that no one would have treasure from them. Koresh, when Koresh came up, could you mute yourself, somebody? When Koresh came along and he had permission to build the Beis HaMikdash, and he gave permission to grant it, he was shown these treasures, Koresh. And then Koresh had died, and Ahasuerus took over. And he took over these 1,080 treasures which Nebuchadnezzar had. Now, it says 180 days it took. Well, if you take 180 times 6, es oishe kavoid malchusoi, you call tiferes malchusoi, there are six expressions. Says the Vilna Gaon, 180 times 6 comes to 1,080. And that's the reason why every day he brought out a different treasure. It was incredible. It was like the last day was just as magnificent as the first day. It was a fabulous sensation. Everybody who was there, everybody who saw it, was overwhelmed by the beauty and the treasures that he had, and they had tremendous espiders from it. And that was what was happened there. In other words, in Yiddish they say, they chapped his spiders. They were amazed by the glitter and the grandeur of all that there was there. They were overwhelmed by what they saw. And that was enough to pull them in. And they were very much drawn by it. It was awesome. The opulence was tremendously enticing. It was magnetic. It pulled them in. And they were very much drawn by it. Babelsky mentions in his Maimer and says that we see in different doiros that Klal Yisrael have been affected by this at different times. For example, in the Yovan, we know that they were drawn in to the Greek theater, the Greek science, the sport, the architecture, the plays, and they were drawn in by that, and they became misyavnin. They were overwhelmed by the excitement of the intellectual studies that they have. It was so charming and so enchanting to them. They were brought in by it, and that was the cause of them becoming misyavnim. We see that. And that was the similar idea here. It was like the idea of Nenu Mitzudas Achashverosh. The same concept came out. You see, for example, exactly in Germany that was like. What happened in Germany? The people were overwhelmed by the German culture and they became more German than the Germans, they say. Rav Avigdor Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, has a whole sefer on this called The Divine Madness. And he explained just how German the Jewish people were there. They were so taken in by the culture and the sophistication and the elegance of it, they were drawn in. And that was the problem here. And they were so enticed, they had such inspirers. It was so overwhelming. And that's what happened at the Suda Sachashverosh. And that was the chet which they had done wrong. Lamaisa, that's the reason why we say in Al Chet Shechotanu Lefonecha, B'simhoin Levov. B'simhoin Levov means to be overwhelmed, to be awestruck by what you see by the Umas HaOlam, and that was the chet, that was happened by Yovan, and that was what happened by Germany, we see that as well. And it began here in the time, as we see, by the time of Shushan. They were taken in by it, by the culture, by the elegance of it all, and it was so impressive to them, that was the chet which they did. And that's what it means, Ne'enu Mitzudas Achashverosh. That was the problem they had. I know myself, coming from England, and you see a tremendous amount of pomp and pageantry and elegance. If you go down like to the West End of London or you go down to the City of London, you see people dressed in the most beautiful way, beautiful pinstripe suits and women dressed in the top elegance and made up and shoes are polished. And you see that in the city. You see it in Manhattan as well. And you begin to turn around and you can say, there's a world here. There's a real world here. There's something behind it all. Especially with the royalty in England. I personally feel, and I'm not an anarchist, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not suggesting that, but the royalty in England gives a tremendous amount of elegance and style, and people are drawn in by that. And that's what happened by Ne'enu Mitzudas Achashverosh. It's the same thing. You know what they say, clothes maketh man, but nothing else made them. And clothes, the outside, the external, was very sophisticated, very, very brilliant, very attractive, and they were pulled in by that. And you see it very much in England. You see exactly that happen in England. People are drawn in by the culture. And you see outside, it's a little bit like, you know, they say when the Moraglim came to Eretz Yisrael, they said to themselves, "Vanihye ve'einenu kachagovim," we were like grasshoppers in our eyes, "v'chein hayinu ve'einehem," and that's how we were in their eyes. In other words, you feel you are nobody. You feel you are nothing. You don't have a great wealth. And you see people strutting around, like, especially in London. I remember seeing in the City of London. I used to work there as a lawyer there. And in the West End as well. People are dressed very well. And you see, there's a world here. There's a world of great affluence. And that was the chait of men who misut the sachas. They were so much taken in by it, they were drawn in, and it's alchet shachatonu lefanecha b'sim ha'nevav. That's behind it all, to be overwhelmed by the culture of the goyim. Just I remember a point myself, when we first got married, my wife was from America, so I wanted to take her around a little bit to show her the sights of London. She hadn't seen any of the sights of London, so I took her to Windsor Castle. And Windsor Castle is a magnificent home of the Queen, and around Windsor Castle there's a baby park called Windsor Park, a very big park, magnificent park. And we were driving around, and as we were driving around Windsor Park, we came to a very large white gates, very big gates. It's like a private property inside there. As I turned the car around, the gates opened. So I thought, no, I said to my wife, no, let's go in. Maybe she's expecting us, I don't know. We drove in, and I drove into this magnificent area. As far as the eye could see, it looked literally, Rabbi said, as if the grass had been manicured, like with scissors. The flowers and the plants and the trees, it was absolutely beautiful. Evidently, it was a private area of the Queen. The gates had opened. I don't know why the gates had opened. And we drove around there. It didn't take long before all the king's horses and all the king's men came running after us. You know, they said, what are you doing in here? We were driving around. It was acres and acres of it. Magnificent land. It was very inspiring. You look at it and you see the wealth and you see the affluence there. I remember my wife, we drove out quickly. We were thrown out of the park quickly. We went into the wrong area. But it pulls you in. It pulls you in. Now, what's behind this? What's behind this Ner Numisur Sachashverosh? And this really is the point of this year. The idea is that what happened in Shushan, they were so taken in, they had such spiders from it, that I believe it went a little bit further. Rabelsky does not say this. But as I was preparing this year, I thought about it. It was Parsha Zohar. I would like to go further than this, a little bit deeper. And I think it's much deeper than just Ner Numisur Sachashverosh. I think it's broaching a little bit on the responsibilities that we have towards Amalek. Let me explain. The mitzvah in the Torah is Mechias Amalek. Now, Mechias Amalek means blotting out the memory of Amalek. It means that if you know an Amaleki, but nowadays we don't know, then there's a responsibility to kill him. But the problem is Sancheiriv had mixed up all the nations together in the world, and we don't know today who is an Amalek. We don't know. But that doesn't mean to say that there isn't still the remnant of the philosophy of Amalek, of the mindset of Amalek. What do I mean by that? And that's what I think is the connection behind the Ner Numisur Sachashverosh. Rabelsky does not say this, but I think I want to take it down here a little bit further. What was the crime of Amalek? After Klal Yisrael came out of Kriyas Yam Suf, all the nations in the world were overwhelmed. Chilu Oda Yochezun, everybody was trembling because every area of water split, and everybody knew it was for Klal Yisrael. It was a tremendous amount of inspiration, and the people were drawn towards Klal Yisrael, and everybody was frightened about Kodesh Baruch Hu because of the Kriyas Yam Suf. Along came Amalek from 400 miles away. They had no connection whatsoever. They were not threatened in any way whatsoever. And they came close and they made a milchoma. And Rashi brings the beautiful marshal of, they jumped in the hot bath. No one could go near Klal Yisrael. It was boiling hot. Everyone was terrified of Klal Yisrael. Along came Amalek and diluted it and weakened the whole impression from Kriyas Yam Suf. That's what they did. They were mezalzel. They weakened, they abused these great arachim of Kedusha and of Koyach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was all diluted. Amalek came along and weakened the impression from Kriyas Yam Suf. And that's what we say, Asher Koyach HaBaderach, Koyach is the lotion of cooling down. They cooled down this fervor that people had for HaKadosh Baruch Hu after Kriyas Yam Suf, and they weakened the whole impression that there was. They diluted this great fervor that was. And the prophet says, V'lo yorei Elokim. That's what Amalek did. Amalek was mezalzel in the standards, in the values of Kedusha. They abused them. They brought it down. And I think that's what perhaps we're dealing with, Lanias Daiti, when it comes to something like Parshas Amalek and Ner Numisur Sachashverosh. I think the two go together. Let me explain it. And there's a beautiful description given. If you have a look in the writings of Reb Chaim Friedlander, he gives a phrase which I think is a perfect phrase. It's almost onomatopoeic, I think, in Hebrew. He says there's something called tishtush hatuchumim. Tishtush means to smudge, to dilute, to blurred, hatuchumim, the frontiers. They smudged the frontiers, meaning Everybody knows, there's no question. Hardcore kefira is amalek, no question. That's the essence. The source of kefira is amalek, hardcore. But the problem is, when we have esteem and admiration for amalek, we're metashtesh, the tchumim, the frontiers become a little bit blurred. Because you see great pageantry, you see great pomp, you go down to the city and you see great wealth and affluence of the Ummah Sa'ilam, and you begin to think, yeah, I say that I have my little home, and I have my Shabbos, I learn my Daf HaYomi, I have my standards that I have, but there is a great world out there, a great world, you think. And you see that, especially in America, the great wealth and the in Manhattan, and the people dressed a certain way with great elegance and great sophistication. You think there's a world there. And that is called, I'm suggesting, smudging the frontier, tishtush hatchumim. And that tishtush is part of the mitzvah of Mechiyas HaMolek, to clear up that blurred smudge which there is. And I think that's, in our times, we don't have a Mechiyas HaMolek, but one should be very clear, there isn't a world outside there. You think there's a great Oisha Kavod Malchusa, you call Tiferet Malchusa. One thinks that, but it's not. It's just an chitzonius. It's a materialistic world. It's a world made up of tremendous sensation and fabulous and wealth and externals. But there's no pnimius inside there. There isn't anything inside there. You know it yourself. The standards are all standards which are false. They don't have qualities of emes and midas like in Palestine. And that tishtush, that smudging, is part of the remnants, I think, of the mitzvah Mechiyas HaMolek in our times. And especially when it comes to the chait of Purim, nenu misud asachashev. What does it mean, nenu misud asachashev? They were metushtash. They realized the importance of Torah. Of course they did. They weren't hardcore amalekim. I'm not saying that. But that blurring, that smudging, is what comes out when you admire what the Ummah Sa'olam have. And I'm suggesting that's the point behind it all. And that's our Mechiyas HaMolek in our times. When you have admiration and esteem for something which is really only chitzonius, there's nothing more than that. Let me give you an example, which happened to me, which really brought the point home to me. One day I was coming out, excuse me one second, I was coming out of the new yeshiva, and I had a car at the time, and I drove down Shmuel HaNavi, and I saw on the road there, on the sidewalk, was Hagon with Moshe Shapiro, who was walking along. So I stopped the car, and I asked the Rav, if he could give him a ride. So he said, with pleasure. He got in the car, and we drove down towards Shmuel HaNavi, down Shmuel HaNavi. All of a sudden, we came towards Rav Yecheskel, and as we came closer, the police came up and pushed us, all the cars were pushed to the side. No one could drive on the road. Everything, on both sides, all the cars were stopped. The police pushed us to the side. And there was a grand celebration which was coming out. All the cars, you know, all the official cars, the government cars, and police, and sirens, and everything. And actually, it was the time of the state visit of James Baker. If you remember James Baker from the ministry, from the government of George Bush, so he, the Secretary of State, was here coming in, was making a trip. And he was driving down the road with his whole entourage, the whole procession of them coming down the road. And then the car of Mr. Baker came right close to us, right close to the car. I think it might have stopped or something just near us or something. And as the car stopped right near us, he was moving on, as the car of Mr. Baker came closer, the Moshe turned around to me and said to me as follows, well, there you have it. He said like this. He said, we'll probably never get as close as that to the Avi Avos HaTuma as just now. That's what he said. The Avi Avos HaTuma. That's what he said to me. Meaning, yeah. They are, but you should know who they are. It's Avos HaTuma. There's not Kedusha. There's no great. They're great ministers of state, maybe, but we'll come on to it in a minute. But I think that's the point. That tishtush, he cleared it up for me. Don't think that in these government officers and these great dignitaries, you know, there's anything sublime about them. It's not true. And that's what he was trying to tell me. That's the point behind it. So what I'd like to do in this shiur, and it's a short shiur, but I'd like to give this point over as follows. If we are supposed to be, and it comes to Purim, Am Sugula Mikol Ha'anim, and a Goy Kodosh, and Am Leches Koyanim, if we have that, where should we be awestruck? Where should we have Hispilus? Where should we be overwhelmed? Where, honestly, truly, is the Oyshe Kvoid Malchuso, Uyukol Tiferes Malchus, where is it? Where are these six expressions? You think you find it amongst the Goyim? If you think that's where the Hispilus is, then it's a Tishtush. It's the smudging of the frontiers. Don't think that. And I'd like to give certain examples. Myself, I come from England, and things which I saw myself, I'd like to share with you and compare them with where we should be really awesome and overwhelmed in Torah mitzvahs. I'll give you some examples. Some example which I thought of, where the tish-tush comes in, and I think especially for people in England, I know, they have this confusion, and they're smudged from their real values of what Kedusha really is. I'll give you some examples. The Queen in England, every year, holds what's called garden parties. She opens up the doors of Buckingham Palace, and she invites people in to come and have a garden party, whatever it is, and one hobnobs with all the dignitaries and everything. I've never been myself, I don't know, but I know somebody who once went there. And he said, you know, you walk around the garden there, and maybe the Queen will wave at you, and I don't know whose prestige is. Is it the prestige of the people who are visiting, or for the prestige of the Queen? I don't know. What is it exactly? I suppose you could call it, in secular in Jewish terms, hachnosas orchim, no? She invites people into her garden and does what's called inviting guests in and shows them around the garden. That's the way they do it. I suppose you'll say that. What does it mean when a person does the mitzvah of hachnosas orchim? What does it mean when we do hachnosas orchim? There's one thing in mind. It's a mitzvah from Melech Malchei HaMelochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is such a great mitzvah that it's even Doicha Seichazal. You remember Avraham Avinu turned around and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, excuse me, I have to have guests here. I can't talk. It's even Doicha Kabbalat B'nei HaShechina. It even pushes aside that. It's a phenomenal mitzvah with one intention one has. There's only one intention. In the words of the Chofetz Chaim in Avas Chesed, it is Leheitiv Es HaBriyas, to be good to somebody else, to make somebody feel very good, to be benevolent. And the mitzvah's involved that a person shouldn't embarrass the guest, make sure the guest feels comfortable, make sure the guest, you don't look at the guest when he's eating, and to make him, that's what it is. That's Hachnosas Orchim. So if you want to be awestruck by Hachnosas Orchim, don't look at the garden party in Buckingham Palace. Look at the mitzvah of Hachnosas Orchim. And it's an incredible mitzvah about Keren Keimet Lo'olam Habo. People are overwhelmed by the Queen's garden party. It's not Hachnosas Orchim. It's not. It's something for prestige, for snobbery value, I don't know. But think of the mitzvah. When you do a mitzvah and you bring somebody into your house and you feed them and you look after them and you make them feel good and you give them a tremendous amount of support and chizuk, that's a great, that's an awesome mitzvah. That's where you should be dumbstruck by it. That's where you should have spiders from. Let's move on. Let's move on to the whole what does it mean, the concept of Malchus? You know, you see in England, you see tremendous trappings of pageantry of Malchus. And you think that's Malchus. I don't know if there's really any chesed there behind it all. I remember when I was in Ha'anof, Hagon, the Rosh Yeshiva, the great tzaddik, the Moshe Shmuel Shapiro, his yeshiva was there in Ha'anof at the time, Zechus Aglivocha. I remember he told us once at a kiddush that at the beginning of the Second World War, King George VI asked for people to come forward and dedicate certain time and money to help the government, because there was strapped for government for money, and there wasn't any money around. So they said, I think the king said he was going to give a certain amount of money, I don't know how much. What does it mean, giving money to help the government? What does it mean, chesed? What is a monarchy here? Just by the way, I remember when Moshe Shmuel Taman said, and I think they managed to raise £100,000 or something. Some of the very, very menial amount of money. But the concept of chesed is not there. It's not there. Let me read out to you the Rambam, what monarchy really is. What does it mean to be a monarch? And you don't see this by Umar Sarinam. Listen to these words of the Rambam. I know I must explain quite clearly, the Gemara does say a person should run to see a monarch of Umar Sarinam, so that when you see that, you'll begin to understand what it means by monarchy in Klal Yisrael. But let me tell you what monarchy is in Klal Yisrael. What is Malchus? Listen to these words of the Rambam in Hilchus Melochim. He says as follows. Below Yinhag Gasus Leiv B'Yisrael, a monarch, a king, must never act with pride in front of Klal Yisrael. V'yechoine, he should be very gracious, umarachim, and very merciful, liktanim ugedoinim. This is the conduct required of a melech, to be tremendously careful and merciful and compassionate. V'yetse b'yovah b'chetzehem, and go out and care for all their needs. Be yochos and be concerned and worried. Listen to this. Al kovod shebeketaneim, on a little child, on everybody he has to be concerned. U'kishemedaber el kol hakahal beloshen rabim. When he talks to the nation, he must talk beloshen rakus. Speak very gently and softly. And he should say, La'olam yisnai banova. A monarch must always act with tremendous humility. Ein lanu ela mi Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, Anachnu mo. The yis bal tochem, and carry all their troubles, umasom, the tumasim, all their complaints, and listen to them carefully. And he said, you should be like a mother, like with a nursing child. Roya, he's called a shepherd, and the shepherd holds everybody in his arms and cares for them all. That's a monarch. You don't see that by Umasa'olam. You don't see the same. If you want to be awesome and you want to have inspirers, don't be inspired by Malchus of Umasa'olam. And people, there's no real chesed there. You see chesed when you come to a melech of Klal Yisrael, you see that. Let's take a little bit further, another example. In England, I can only talk from my own experiences, I know, because I've seen a few, I've been a few times, a tremendous amount of celebration is made when they have a royal procession. For example, I don't know, the opening of Parliament or the Queen's trooping of the colour. They have different things, especially when they have a state visit. I remember I was once in London, and there was a state visit from one of a king or somebody or a president from a neighbour, from a different country, I think from Chile it was. And the guards came out with all their streimels on, and the bands came out, and the king rode in a beautiful golden carriage, and a tremendous procession it was. And great honour was given with the band playing and everything for a procession of the queen, a procession. What happens tonight when you come back from shul? What happens? That's a procession also. You know what happens when you come back from shul tonight? You say vayichulu, two malachim accompany, and they walk you home tonight from shul after you say vayichulu. It's the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Yutes. This is a procession. And they walk with you home from shul once you said vayichulu, and they put their hands on your head, and they say to you, Tuchupa ovan, yehei chapos, all your aveiros should be forgiven, and you should have forgiveness for all your aveiros that you've done. They then come in the house together. And the two malachim stand there, and they look and see the house which is all prepared. And they say, the one malach turns around to the other and says, let it be like this the following week. And they give you a bracha. That's a procession, no? That's an incredible procession. That's something to be awesome about. That's overwhelming. That's something to have inspired one. The procession on Friday night when you come home, when the malachim accompany you. It's a beautiful procession, no? Let's take another example. Another example. In England, they make a tremendous, tremendous celebration. It's like a gala exhibition when there's a royal wedding. A royal wedding, they pull out all the stoppers and everyone comes on the streets and cheers and they look to see what the queen is wearing and what the princess is wearing and what every member of the family is wearing. It's a whole thing of style and elegance and a tremendous amount of pomp is made about it. When it's a wedding and the guards stand on the road and the royal wedding. What does it mean, a wedding? There's a difference between a wedding and a marriage. A wedding, maybe it's a great wedding. But when you have, like in our times, I went to a chasna the other day, and there were 10 people standing in the backyard, and you have a chosan and a kala. What is that celebration of a wedding of a chosan and kala? It means one thing, that the Shekhinah comes and lives with this man and woman. It's a loving twosome. It's a holy threesome. Ish ve'isha, Shekhinah shuya kenegdam. If you want to be awesome and dumbstruck and you want to be overwhelmed, look what happens here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and lives with this couple. When they say the bracha, there's a shayla actually asking the halacha, when does the Shekhinah come into the marriage of a man and a woman? When does the Shekhinah enter? So Chazal say, at the first of the brachas of Sheva brachas, when you say the bracha, Shakol bora lichvoidoi, when you say that bracha, that bracha is the insertion of the Shekhinah in the marriage, because they came together for kavod shamayim, to make a family, to build up a family. And that's called one of the chubos of Yerushalayim. That's overwhelming what happens here. This is a new Beis HaMikdash here, a Mishkan Ma'at in Klal Yisrael. The simcha of a chosan and kala is way beyond any joy that you'll find of a royal wedding in London. Much more than that. The joy is the joy of Torah, of Matan Torah. Chazal say there are six koilos, kol sosen, kol simcha, kol chosen, kol mitzalos chasadim. That's keneged the six koilos of Sinai. And the Maharal calls it a havaya elokit, a divine experience. Because the Shekhinah comes down and dwells, like on Sinai, dwells between this chosen and kala. It can be in the backyard with 10 people there in the corona. It's much more significant and much more overwhelming than it is a royal wedding. That's a great wedding with all the pomp and the pageantry. But what you have here is a hashuah, a Shekhinah here. A couple coming together to create a family, to create a family, create a Ben Adam. No, that's behind it. And let's go a little bit further. Let's take it even further. In the secular world, Badi Umas Olam, what does it mean when a man and a woman live together? What does it mean by living together? In reality, we both say, you know yourselves, it's reduced to a three-letter word which has immoral connotations of tumah, and there's no kedusha there. This one three-letter word, it describes when a man and woman live together. What does it mean in Torah terminology when a man and woman live together? The Zohar explains, when a man and woman live together, it has the same kedusha of kol nidre. You're creating a human being here. That's something awesome. That's overwhelming here. You're creating a new human being when a man and woman went to the mikveh, and now you have this phenomenal kedusha here, like kol nidre, when a man and woman live together. Not that three-letter word. That's something to be over-inspired about. That's something to have to be dumbstruck by. That's awesome. If you're going to have something which is going to be hispilus, that's something to have hispilus about. There's no hispilus by their terminology. By our terminology, there's an enormous kedusha which is there. Let's take it further. I know many people in the world are very much overwhelmed by great statesmen and great people in the world of the secular world. For example, great people in the world who've lived through the world, and they've made a great impression on their life. I'm not saying it's nothing, but the best definition I think I ever heard from it was from Rebbe Chanan Wasserman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He said it at the time of the funeral of the Chofetz Chaim. This is what he said. He said, in referring to the Chofetz Chaim, I want to make it clear, what is the difference between a great man by the Umas HaOlam and a great man in Torah? And he said it like this. This is the way he put it, Rebbe Chanan. He explained, by the Umas HaOlam, in the secular world, a great man is much, much greater the further away you are from him. The further away you say he's a great man. For example, I suppose in America they would say Winston Churchill was a great, great man. Maybe in England they would say that John Kennedy was a great man, a great, I don't know, Roosevelt they'll say. When you're far away from somebody, you say, a great man, a great statesman. But then, said Rebbe Chanan, when you get up close and you see who they are, they might well turn around to you and say, please don't look any further. Don't look any deeper. Don't look to see what they were inside. Don't examine further. I remember it came across to me very, very sharply. In school, when I was in school, we were told to read all the long, long books of Tolstoy. I don't know if you ever remember them. But Tolstoy lectured tremendously about marital harmony and humility and all beautiful middles that he wrote about. And I always thought it was very impressive and a lot of philosophy, beautiful ethics behind it. Until one day I found an article from Sofia Tolstoy, the daughter of Tolstoy, and she described what it was like living at home with her parents. She said, it was incredible what she said. She said, my father lectured all the time about marital harmony, but I can only tell you, my parents living together were like cannibals at each other. They like barked at each other. There was no harmony at all. My father, she said, lectured enormously about modesty and humility, and every single wall in our house had a picture of my father. He insisted every wall have a picture. So she then made a beautiful comment. I think such a beautiful description. She said, and therefore we can say, what is the definition of a martyr? Someone who's forced to live with a saint. That's what she said. Someone has to live with a saint. So-called saint he was. And that's called a great man by the Umas HaOlam. Then Rebbe Chanan then said, a great man in Torah means as follows. And this is the difference. This is where we should have his spiders from. A great man in Torah means the closer you are, the greater he is. The more you look at him, and he was referring to the Chofetz Chaim, watching the Chofetz Chaim in his daily behavior, that you realize what a great person he was. And I remember reading at the beginning of the writings of Rabbi Yerucham Yevovitz, Das Chochma Musa. It described there the scene when Rabbi Yerucham had died. When Yerucham had died, the Rebbetzin gathered together all the children and took them into the kitchen. She said as follows, it's in the beginning of Das Chochma Musa. She said to the children, you are going to hear during the course of this week how great your father was. And people are going to come in this week during the Shiva and say tremendous things. She then turned around to them and said to them as follows, but you should know, your father was a malach. I'm telling you, he was a malach. And she said, I lived with him. And that's what he was like. The closer you are, the greater they are. I remember coming here, remember the article, remember when they brought out, the art scholar brought out the sefer about the Moshe Feinstein. It was brought out in a hurry, very quickly. And they later did another work, Rabbi Finkelman rewrote it because it wasn't detailed. But in order to bring it out, I think, at the end of the year, they did it very quickly. And when they brought it out, they brought a copy of it to Revetson Feinstein. She was alive at the time. And they asked her to read and asked for her comments. I remember reading about it. She said, yeah, it's very nice what you wrote, but you didn't get the Moshe. So they said, what do you mean? So Revetson Feinstein said, I'll tell you why. Because you didn't get this point. Living with the Moshe was Purim every day. You hear such a thing, Purim every day. That's what she said. Every day was Purim then. It's the most beautiful, incredible thing to say. Living with the person. And that's the point here. We should have Ispailus on these great people. The great speeches which are made by the Ummah Salam. Yes, we can do anything. The tremendous confidence which they have and the pride which they have. We shouldn't have Ispailus on their great speeches. We should have Ispailus on these great Talmidei Chachamim. I don't know if you read recently, just now, Rabbi Dr. Twersky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was just Nista, and they brought out an article, I read it just, I think last week it was, that before he had died, he wrote something about reaching the age of 90. I think it was written maybe a few weeks before he was Nista, I think, something like that. And it says in the article that he was explaining, what does it mean? This is a speech from a great man in Torah, a great man in Klal Yisrael, a great psychiatrist. And he wrote, what does it mean to reach 90? He explained that when we say the Birchas HaShachar in the morning, the Birchas HaShachar are all in one tense. They're all in the present. Pokeach Ivrim, Malbish Arumim, Matir Asur, they're all in the present tense. But there's one bracha which refers to the past. And that is She'osali Kol Tzorki. He asked, why is it that this bracha that Hashem provided all my needs, why is it all in the past? Why don't we say that He makes all my needs? Why is it in the past? So Dr. Twersky turned around and said, I'll tell you why. Because of all the things that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does for you in the course of your life, you don't realize the great kindness and appreciate it and the gratitude until afterwards. You realize what has happened in your life, and that's where you look at your life at the age of 90. You look back and you see the great kindness which HaKadosh Baruch has done to you. That's the statement of a great man. No, not the great speeches what they make. The great man is made up of all that he's had in his life, and he remembers all the great events that he's had in his life. That's the making of it. Let's go a little bit further. Where should we have his spiders in Klal Yisrael? Where should we be overwhelmed? What are the roots of the Ummah Sa'olam? They believe man came from a monkey. So it's an evolution. So the source of man is a monkey. So how come he became so great and such a great statesman? Because he made the boast of himself. He's a self-made hero. Self-made man. And he built himself up. And he educated himself. And he was very astute. And he reached great heights. But his roots are from a monkey. Where does a great person, where does a person come from in Klal Yisrael? This is where the spiders come. We come from the Avos HaKadoshim. Our mice are Avos Simon Labonim. We have great, great ancestry here. Our roots go way back to the Avos HaKadoshim. Our roots are far, far greater than all this. Much, much greater. And that's where we must have his spiders. If we say by in Shushan, Neinu Misudas Achashverosh, I'm suggesting we have what's called Tishtush HaTchumim. We have smudging of the frontiers. We're overwhelmed by royalty, we're overwhelmed by pageantry, we're overwhelmed by great statesmen, we're overwhelmed by their great education. There is a Vada, there's Chochmah there, and of course there's monarchy. I'm not decrying the monarchy, but Hispilus, and that was the fate of the Jews in Shushan. They went along to the bent to the Suda, and they were Choytan, B'Simhon Levav. They thought there's a great world there, and there isn't a great world there. What we should do is we should be awestruck. We should be awestruck, for example, by someone who doesn't act lishmo. The Chaim Volozhin writes in Nefesh HaChaim, what does it mean, learning Torah lishmo? Why do you learn Torah? Because Hashem wants us to learn Torah. That's awesome. That's overwhelming. And the Ummah Sa'olam, there's no such thing as lishmo. What's in it for me? What do I get out of it? By Klal Yisrael, there's something called lishmo, l'shem shamayim. That's a phenomenal attribute to do something lishmo. We should be overwhelmed and awesome by a Ben Torah who's dedicated to his Torah, Mesiras Nefesh, the making of the Talmud Chacham. We should be overwhelmed by the nature and the stature of someone called an Eishes Chayil. What a woman does for her family, her tremendous devotion and her care and her love, looking after her family, and her tzniyus. That's what's awesome. A queen is not awesome. What's awesome by us and inspired us is somebody like an Eish Yisrael, a woman who looks after her family and brings up her family. That's awesome. That's tremendous. That's where we should have inspired us from. We should have inspired us by a person who works on his midas. There's no such thing as working on midas, on chesed and emes, by the Umas Olam. By us there is. That's what we should do. We should be overwhelmed, Rabbi Yisai, how we start the day and how they start the day. How do they start the day? A cup of coffee and they look to see the news. That's how they start the day. How do we start the day? We start the day by Birchas HaShachar, by saying thank you and appreciating everything. That's awesome. That's overwhelming. That's where we should have inspired from. There should be no tishtush hatchumim. There should be no smudging of frontiers. Let me share with you just a thought which I saw recently by the Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes says, why is a Jew called a Yehudi? Where does the name Yehudi come from? The name Yehudi comes from Yehuda. When Leah gave birth to Yehuda, Oideth Hashem Hapam, I will thank Hashem this one time. What does it mean, Oideth Hashem Hapam? What was she saying here? Leah knew, Beruach HaKodesh, that there would be 12 children, 12 tribes. She understood that each wife would have 3 children. There were 4 wives, Bilhah and Zilpah, Rachel and Leah. When she had her 4th child, which was Yehuda, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and then she had Yehuda, she said, I've been given more than I really deserve, and therefore I'm calling the child Yehudi. Says the Sfas Emes, that's a Yehudi. You realize you'd be given more than you deserve. Isn't that a beautiful comment? A Yehudi is someone who feels, I have more. It's more than I have. That's awesome. That's overwhelming when a Jew says that. A Yehudi is overwhelmed because he has more than what he has. We should be overwhelmed, Rabbi Yisai, by the renaissance of Torah after the Shoah. But what happened to us? Such a decimation and how everything was cut. That's overwhelming. That's awesome there, what there is there. Let's just conclude and we'll say like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Klal Yisrael, they were ne'eneh by Sulas Achashverosh, but they realized very soon afterwards what there is behind it all. A drunken king who killed his wife, who hired his secretary of state to kill all the Jews, and no one was crying for Klal Yisrael. No one was upset. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Klal Yisrael in Shushan. You see, you're getting his spiders from these people. That's not the people to be his spiders about. Have his spiders for someone like Mordechai and Esther. That's the person you should be inspired to. That's the point behind it. What are we saying, really? That's what we're saying, really, men. HaKulam b'teilim uvutalim lo shirim b'lo kayomim. It's null and void. There isn't anything there. And when we have tishtush hatchumim, when we have this smudging in our frontiers, we need someone, I think, I was thinking, like Elioa Novi to come forward, like Har HaKarmel. He needs to stand in front of us and say to us as follows after the tour, Im Lashem, Lashem, Im Lamolek, Lamolek. Okay, so make your mind up. Which one is, where's the Hispilus? The Hispilus must come from Klal Yisrael, from the great people, from the great roots that we have, from the Talmid HaChomim, from the Eish Yisrael. That's where we must have his silence. And that, I think, is really what Parsha Zohar is all about. Parsha Zohar, really, I think the Ne'enu Mitzvah Sachashverosh is the Zilzul in Kedusha. That's what it was. And therefore, the decree came about because they were close to Bechiyas HaMolek. They should have turned around and said, you know, this is not our world. And they shouldn't have been upset. I don't know, when they came to the banquet dinner in Shushan, maybe they were broken. They saw the Kedem of the Beis HaMikdash being brought out. Maybe that did upset them very much. But the fact that it says Ne'enu, and that's what Rabbi Shimon Vayechai told the Talmidim, they were Ne'enu, they had Hispilus, they were overwhelmed by it, and they shouldn't have been. They should have turned around and said, okay, we have to be here, and let's leave as soon as we can. But since they had Hanor, that's together Al-Chechotonu L'Fanecha B'Simchon Levov. And when they saw this world and they thought this is a real world, that's where the chet was. And that perhaps is the chet of Yovan and Germany as well. And I think many people in England, I know when they get the greatest spiders from the Queen, and the one should give respect to her. I'm not saying chas v'shalom, I'm not decrying it, but the hispilus shouldn't be there. That's the point. There should be no tishtush hatuchumim. There should be no smudging of the frontiers. Ashreinu mato v'chalkeinu. Have you all a good Shabbos and a freilich and pulim.
Good Shabbos, thank you.
Good Shabbos, thank you.
Shabbos,
thank you very much.
Shabbos, well, thank you.
Lisa, can you repeat the name of the Holland, please?
Sorry?
Can you repeat the name of the lady who needs a davenfar? I heard
Basher Rochel Basrus. Basher Rochel Basrus.
Thank you for the shiur, Rabbi. Have a wonderful